Andrew Herman will be here a little bit later in this half hour. You know, Andrew's an editor at DNA Info, and we talk about openings and closings with Andrew. And I think we're going to pretty much hang out in Logan Square today. A couple things, a co-op workplace, a shared work spot opening there. And also, do you remember, I think it was last year, Taco Bell won the right or the approval to have to serve liquor at one of their restaurants in Wicker Park. Well, now they've moved up the street a little bit to Logan Square, and there's a fight in Logan Square about whether to do that there. So we'll talk to Andrew about that. Also later in the program, Suzanne Muchen, the co-host of The Big Payoff at WGNRadio.com, the podcast. She comes by and talks about women's issues in the workplace. Kim, so a couple of issues that we're going to talk about. I kind of missed last night the verdict in the Taylor Swift case that came down.
That was a big, yeah.
I can't believe I didn't get that. My phone didn't light up with all sorts of alerts, but Taylor Swift won that. Clearly, one of the most powerful people in entertainment. So we'll talk to Suzanne about that. And also Shonda Rhimes, another of the most popular and powerful people in entertainment, with the big deal with Netflix. So we'll kick that around with Suzanne Muchen. And as I said, a little bit later than the CEO of Jiffy Cat, who will talk about all of the downloads that you can put on your phone. But we start every Tuesday with John Najarian from CNBC as he keeps his eyes on Wall Street. He's doing that today, and he joins us now on a phone line. John, welcome back to the Wintrust Business Lunch.
Great to be with you. Thank you, Stephen.
Now, have you been asked yet to join the President's Council on Manufacturing, because there are some openings?
Well, that's true, but I don't really manufacture anything.
No,
so,
no.
For that reason alone, I'm probably not part of the list.
So you'll have to wait till the absences get a little greater before you qualify.
Yeah, but I would say that my friend Anthony, who you and I have talked about a lot, has certainly been making the rounds on the television circuit of late.
Yeah, and he's handling himself. He's doing pretty well. He was on This Week with George Stephanopoulos on Sunday. He was on the Colbert Show last night. Is it Late Night? And, you know, seems to have tempered himself a little bit. But, you know, he's still in clear that I can see what you like about him, because there is this sort of blunt or refreshing honesty about what he has to say.
Yeah, that's very true. And he's usually very calm in the way that he delivers information, with the exception being with that New Yorker reporter.
Yeah.
But other than that, he usually is very measured. And like I say, it's just apparently that's going to be his shtick for the rest of his career, is that that was a one-off.
He said he knew he wouldn't last very long, but he thought he'd last longer than a carton of milk.
Exactly. I remember that quote, and I think other people had probably said that about him as well.
So there's the mooch. I don't know. Have you talked to him since all of this has happened?
Yes, I have.
And
yes,
what?
I have. He's in good spirits, and he's pushing ahead. And for God's sake, I guess when you can put it behind you that quickly, he says that there is interest in him on a variety of levels, from books to television shows. So we'll have to see how that plays out.
Yeah, I was going to ask you what might be next for him. I mean, the book, well, I know there's one big chapter in that book, but I would imagine there are a few leading up to it as well.
Yeah, there might be.
All
and
right.
But it will be a bestseller, I'm sure.
I'm sure that is true. Let's talk about, I made a little joke about the Manufacturing Council, but, you know, when the president tweeted out, there were three who'd quit, I think, earlier today. And the president tweeted out, you know, I've got people lined up to take their place. And then a fourth quit. And then if you consider that Bob Iger from Disney quit earlier this summer, Elon Musk did as well, I think, over the Paris Accords. Those people are dropping off. I don't really put much stock in any of those advisory councils. Seems to me that it's access or whatever. But I just wonder, is you a guy watching Wall Street and sort of the relationship and marriage between industry and the White House, if there's any significance to that, if anything means it, or, you know, is this just sort of a one-off story and it's not going to have it's not a sign of a deeper rift or deeper problems to come?
I do think it is a sign of a rift. I don't know how I could cast it any other way, but I would say that certainly business under the previous administration and the 8 years that President Obama was in the seat that now President Trump occupies, I don't think there was that strong a relationship with that president either.
Right.
And the bottom line was, though, that the markets did extremely well. Obviously, they were recovering from an aggressive sell-off in 2008, but the markets did just fine, despite business people telling us repeatedly that it was not a pro-business president. And now that they do have a pro-business president and many are quitting, you know, his advisory councils, the market's still doing okay. So I think it tells us, Stephen, that these advisory councils, as you've said, are photo opportunities.
Right.
And they're perhaps a little opportunity for the president and the business leaders to make it seem like it's something that it isn't.
You know,
that's,
I guess,
not really what they're basing their business decisions on.
I guess it's a handshake in an hour or two around the table, so there's nothing wrong with that, and they both get to claim it. But, right, I don't think that the fact that five leaders are not on that council anymore is going to impact the council's work. I'm not sure what the council does anyway. Hey, I want to ask you, too, so I'm reading today about Amazon, and Amazon today announced that they are going to open five what they call instant pickup Amazons in five locations around the country, nothing in Chicago. But now I want to read this to you. Amazon Instant Pickup makes daily essential items like drinks and snacks, as well as some Amazon devices, available at pickup stations in less than 5 minutes. So in other words, you order on Amazon and then you can go and pick these up within 5 minutes. I always called that a store, John.
Yep, that's what I called it too. I didn't think that was a brand new innovation.
Right.
There was a story last week, Stephen, that I bet caught your eye, that Sears Holdings, which is, of course, Chicago-based,
sure.
Eddie Lampert, a big hedge fund guy, runs that, and it has not done very well. Only JCPenney probably has done worse of the really large box retailers. However, there was a rumor last week that Amazon was taking a look at Sears as potentially a place where they could do distribution of product directly, as just as you say, in a store. So I don't know that whether it's Amazon or Alibaba or even Google or somebody else, that this is an impossibility. But I don't think that bricks and mortar are going to have the same sort of appeal for most of the folks who invest in the kind of multiples you get for Amazon and Alibaba.
It just struck me reading it. I think after the show, I'm going to run over to the Walgreens Instant Pickup and buy a soda.
That's right. Every time we go in from now on, whether it's a Jewel Instant Pickup or Walgreens or CVS Instant Pickup.
It's an Instant Pickup.
Instead of just going shopping.
Hey, I know retail is still suffering. I think it's been down, you know, in their earnings reports. But consumer buying, retail sales, what, the biggest amount, I think, in July since the past December. That's got to be encouraging.
Yeah, and some of that was the Amazon Prime Day that fell during this period that they're measuring. But nonetheless, that does appear around the same time every year since Amazon started it. So this is something that, you know, seeing an increase of 6% in the spend, a lot of that did come from the Amazon Prime Day. But I think there's the consumers clearly are not dead, but there are some sectors that are extremely weak. Auto parts, advanced auto parts, the stock's down 20%. Obviously, things like Uber, the more people can rely on something other than just their own vehicle and instead use somebody else's, I think that is why you've got so many of these auto parts places really under pressure.
And tell me as well, some of the movers today. I think Home Depot beat expectations. Dick's was down a lot earlier. What's the action today?
You're right. Home Depot beat and guided positively, but nonetheless was just hammered. And some of that, I think, is because this is their Christmas. Home Depot, you know, doesn't get the same benefit that Target does of, you know, basically that end of the year
sure.
ramp up. Instead, because people do the planting in the spring, this quarter that we're reporting right now, or that they reported, is usually about as good as it gets, Stephen. So it was very good, but apparently good wasn't good enough, and so they sold it pretty hard. We were buying on this dip, and I'll probably buy a little more if it dips further.
All right, is that your tip, or you got another tip for us today?
Let's see. As far as another tip, Coach, it also, they bought Kate Spade, of course, the purse company that was a competitor. Now it's within their shops. And I think that one was down pretty hard today, too, and we bought that based on aggressive institutional buying on this dip.
All right, John Najarian, great to talk to you again. We'll do it again next Tuesday, all right?
Thank you very much, Stephen.
All right, Andrew's in the studio. Andrew Herman, welcome to the Wintrust Business Lunch.
I can report the sidewalk across on the bridge, on the Michigan Avenue Bridge. Right. Very crowded with tourists.
How's the statue? How's the shadow of the Lincoln statue?
It's awesome.
How long is it? Has it been there 15 years now?
I don't know.
All right. Andrew comes by to talk about openings and closings, and I doubt that you did this on purpose, but looks like we're just hanging out in Logan Square today.
That's where all the cool people hang out.
That's right?
Why we're there.
Is that because the cool people got pushed out of Wicker Park?
That's right.
We've ended up in Logan Square.
We can't afford to live in Wicker anymore.
So in Wicker Park, this kind of amazed me when it happened a year or two ago. Taco Bell opened up a restaurant, I think they called it a cantina, where they served booze. Now, usually you had to have a lot of booze to go into a Taco Bell.
Yeah.
Here, you can go in and then get the booze.
This is a one-stop shop. Yeah, like you say, opened in Wicker Park last year, and the Taco Bell company has about a dozen of these places across the country, and they have another dozen in Canada, so they're finding that there's some profits involved in fast food combined with alcohol. Who
well,
knew?
There always has been, just not at the same time.
So there was one open in Wicker Park last year, and now they're trying to open another one in Logan Square. And there's also, I think, one planned for downtown. But they're trying to open one at 2432 North Milwaukee. And as is often the case in Chicago, if you want to open in a neighborhood, you got to have a neighborhood meeting and get what people's views on.
And Alderman Moreno had a meeting, but I think not everyone's pleased with the way he did it, right? Did he just sort of invite the people he wanted to?
Well, I don't know. They had a meeting, and they had the guy who owns the franchise for the Taco Bell. And he went in there and explained what it was all about, and some people said, hey, this sounds great, you know, new cheap place to eat, and but other people complained about potential noise and litter, and one guy from the Logan Square Preservation Group said, you're trying to turn us into Wicker Park North,
right?
Which is maybe the ultimate insult, I guess, among some people.
Logan Square is sort of, I don't know what the right word is.
Well, it's kind of in transition. It was always a working class neighborhood. I mean, that's where Royko grew up.
Yeah.
Two blocks from this boozy Taco Bell, actually.
Is that right, really?
Yeah, yeah, on Milwaukee Avenue. And so it always had sort of Eastern European ethnic working class background. But, you know, young people are coming in, and it's right near Wicker Park. And so, you know, people are looking for more affordable places to live. And so it's becoming hipper, you know.
Which is a reason we'll be chased out very soon.
Yeah, right.
But, okay, so this idea of the cantina, obviously it's working for them.
Yeah.
You know, I'm kind of struck. If you think of it, people our age, I'm in my mid-50s, it used to be really hard to get booze anywhere. I mean, it was really hard.
Yeah.
And I think that we've really matured on that in the past 10 or 15
well,
years.
Well, in
I
Illinois.
Mean, whether it's in a public park or at a restaurant or things like that.
True. In Illinois, though, in particular, if you travel, you know, around the United States, you can't find alcohol like you can here.
Yeah, is that
I
right?
mean, here in Illinois, you know, there's beer in gas stations on every single corner. And
in Indiana, you can't do that, right? Or you can't sell cold beer.
I know that I was in Pennsylvania recently, and you had to go to three different liquor stores to find, you know, one was for hard liquor, one was for beer, and the other one was for wine. But, yeah, so, I mean, clearly there's a lot more alcohol places to
yeah,
buy alcohol
I just mean
around
it's,
here.
I just feel like it's not so forbidden. It's just a little more mature, and it's not a big deal as much.
Well, they used to try and keep it separate from kids, right?
Right.
Now it's in fast food restaurants.
Well, don't buy your booze and go to Ampersand right around the corner.
right
on Fullerton, right around the corner from this Taco Bell cantina.
Yeah. Yeah, so this is a co-working space, and these are places that have popped up. And it's if you own a business and you're the only employer, maybe you have one other employee, you don't want to rent a big place, so you get into a co-working space, which is kind of like a bullpen situation, which you know, got all kinds of different people, and you get Wi-Fi and a kitchen and some meeting rooms. But apparently some of these places are getting a little out of control.
Because they're just boys clubs there, and they're playing foosball, and a lot of them have kegs, right? Just have taps.
Yeah, well, so they, in order to get people to rent these spaces, like you say, they put in foosball tables in some of them, and pool tables, and they might have like free liquor on a Friday afternoon. But this new group says we're going to be the anti-bro co-working space, anti-frat co-working space, and they're basically saying that we're all adults here, and their first rule is don't be a blank, 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 blank.
All right, and that's Ampersand on Fullerton Avenue.
Right.
But it's interesting, these places, how they come up and sort of try to attract people, because they're charging, $200 a month for a desk, I think?
Yeah.
For a sit-anywhere desk, about $400 if you want a designated desk.
Yeah.
So they have to come up with almost a theme, a decor, and all of that in order to attract people.
You wonder what's happening in these places, that now there's this this new approach to it, that the existing ones must get kind of crazy.
Right. Well, you know what's going to happen, though. They're going to open up, everything's going to be fine, and then the cantina is going to get approval. People are going to be boozing it up over there and having their meetings with a chalupa.
I guess when you're in a co-working space, you're your own boss, right? And what are you going to do, reprimand yourself so things can get out of control?
Andrew Herman from DNA Info Chicago. We'll see you again next week.
Okay.
Suzanne Muschen is in the studio. She's the co-host of The Big Payoff that you could hear at WGNRadio.com, on iTunes, or just about anywhere else. And well, I never really listened to it. So what's The Big Payoff?
You know what? Every time you say it, you have a teeny smile on your face. And I know what you're thinking is, Suzanne knows I really don't listen to her podcast.
I don't listen to very many podcasts, any podcast, really.
So, but you listen to me here.
It's among my favorites. How would you describe it for people?
It's a career advice podcast for women on the rise. So women who are really serious about their careers.
Informative, but informal and very approachable.
I mean, look, we don't take ourselves.
Have a lot of fun.
Oh, yeah. It's a lot of banter, but good stuff.
Okay. So, and then you come in here and we talk about women in the workplace and issues like that. And, well, you now have succeeded in beating me down to where I read and see things just the way
Is
you do.
Is that really how you feel? Beaten down? How about inspired, enlightened?
You've enlightened me. Enlightened me in many ways. And
there you go.
And one of the cases is with the Taylor Swift story, which I hope we'll talk about in a minute.
Yep.
Referring to her not as one of the top female entertainers, but as one of the top entertainers.
Right.
We need to watch that. Okay. So Erica Harold was on with Steve Cochran earlier today. She's run for Congress a couple of times downstate Champaign area. She's going to run as a Republican to try to challenge Attorney General Lisa Madigan. She is Harvard educated, and she also is a Miss America. And so I'm reading about her, and I see an online story written by a friend of mine. And one of his first words are former Miss America.
The headline.
Yeah. And the headline and the first words of the story, going to run. And I thought, there's Suzanne in my head.
Saying that's not okay.
Right. But I think this is, so they say former Miss America. Let me just read it for you. A former Miss America, unsuccessful congressional candidate on Tuesday, expected to announce a Republican bid for Attorney General for the chance to challenge four-term Democrat Lisa Madigan.
Okay, so can we just pause right there?
Right.
You said as a lead into this story about how she was Harvard.
That's because you were watching me.
Exactly. Yeah. Now, if that's way down. That's a couple of lines down. You don't get to that until you keep reading.
I was holding that for this right now because because I think, so you take issue, we shouldn't
say. I take issue that your perception of her, if all you see is former Miss America, and by the way, the photo that they've now put up of her is her in her tiara.
Right.
Okay.
You get one of those if you win Attorney General, too.
You do. I'm sure Lisa wears all the time. Hers looks awesome. But I think if you heard that, you'd have one impression of her. If you had simply put Harvard Law School grad and former Miss America, just that tiny little additional piece of information, you have a whole new narrative.
Okay, so this is interesting to me because I was talking to someone right before we went on, a woman, and she said...
Was she wearing a tiara?
No, but she said that hearing that she was a Miss America would have a negative connotation for people.
I agree.
People. Really, it didn't even occur to me that. Honest to God.
It feels
Suzanne,
light.
That did not even occur to me.
I know that, but I'm saying you wouldn't take her as seriously. You might think, oh, that's nice. I'm just saying, for Attorney General, she's not running for something that you feel has a direct line from Miss America to being Attorney General until you add in this detail that she's a lawyer and went to Harvard Law. Now I have a different take on her.
I think it's interesting that you guys think
you guys, meaning women,
no, just the two women I've talked to most recently think less of her because she's won Miss America. That never occurred to me.
Not less of her as a human being, but less qualified for this position.
That. Yeah, you think that.
Because she's running for Attorney General.
Right, and because she won a beauty pageant.
Right.
I think you're wearing the pants in this conversation.
I'm just saying, Steve. I know you're with me.
You bigot.
Exactly. I can tell when the tides have turned. You just get a little bit more like I'm with you.
No, I'm not. I think this is... Really, I don't think anything less of her because she won... I don't think she's less qualified because she's Miss America, and I think Miss America is the highest profile thing that she, quote unquote, is right now. So that's what you would describe her as.
I'm talking about relevance to her qualifications. Remember, we had the conversation last week about the Harvard Harvard Business Review article about how it's not just about the sort of soft skills that we need to, in addition, talk about women's qualifications.
If Mike Tomczak were to run for governor, we would say former bear Mike Tomczak. We wouldn't say, I forget where he went, but, you know, attorney from such and
such. If he's running for a position like attorney general where the qualifications involve some legal background, the fact that he went to if he had gone to Harvard, the highest level school in that category.
We still would ID him as a former bear because that's how we know him. First, that's how we know him best. We would. We've disagreed on this before.
I feel like you're talking about as a journalist. I am. Grab a headline.
Well, if you're writing for an audience to describe how people would know them or put them in a context, that's what we would use.
Okay. Didn't like it. Made me deeply unhappy.
Okay. Well, I'm glad I pointed it out to you. Let's do Taylor Swift.
Yes.
She wins. She won last night. And a big win, really, I think, because she stood up and she did it. She did it in an interesting way. And there was actually a quote from her. I don't know if these were your words or you pulled this copy, that she won in spite of some of her entertaining and snarky comments from the stand.
Yes.
Were those your words?
Me.
Okay.
Yep.
Yeah.
She didn't. And what she also did, which was important, was she is only asking for a dollar. She made it clear up front that she wasn't suing for money. This isn't about her career. This is really about the issue at hand. And also, I think it speaks in an important way to her audience, which are largely made up of teenage girls who look to her as a role model. We can debate whether that's good, bad, or otherwise. But in this case, she came out and made it really clear, this isn't okay. When a man touches you in a way that makes you uncomfortable, it's not okay. And if she used language in the courtroom that was a bit, you know, I don't know whether to call it snarky or just jarring.
I was surprised. I understand why she used it, because I think it was probably a strategy from her legal team.
Sure.
To be a little jarring. Judges, I got yelled at by a judge once for reading a newspaper in his courtroom because it was disrespectful. I'm surprised that she could say bare ass and all of that.
But do you think there was a different way? I mean, let's be honest. So now you're in the courtroom, you're on the stand, and you're talking about the act that we both know occurred. What is the better way to say it?
For her purposes,
you're Taylor Swift.
If I'm Taylor Swift, I'm going to use as blunt of terms as I can.
Yep.
I'm just saying
judge.
I thought the judge might have tried to temper it, but you know what? But she should have won. I'm glad she won. So that's
she
kind of
did, and I think that there are a lot of people who recognize what she was doing and why she was doing it.
I noticed that there are no women working at Google anymore.
Right, they all quit after
that
article.
It's so bad there.
Exactly, people hate working there, which is not true. This is the fascinating thing that came out in this, you know, study that was released after all the events of last week, where this article was so offensive, talking about why women's innate qualities wouldn't let them be successful at Google. Well, the truth is that in the surveys done that test, Glassdoor does a lot of surveys to check in on how people feel about their workplace, women actually rated the company even higher than men, a 4.4 out of 5 compared to 4.2 for the men.
So women enjoyed working at Google. They self-reported that they did more than men did.
With one exception, and it's an important one, they did not feel they had as good a chance at career advancement. So, and that's not insignificant. So if you like working where you work, but you give it a 3.9 in terms of, do I feel that I have a career path here? That's significant.
It is, but that would factor into the 4.4 too, right?
It would have to. Depends how you ask the question. Do you like working here now? And do you see that you have a career path? Those may, for that generation, you and I come from a place where we have a longer sight line in our jobs.
Right.
All I feel is being said here is, first of all, women do like working at Google. That should have been taken into account in all that occurred last week. And number two, the numbers still do speak for themselves. There aren't as many women at Google. And if they don't see their chances for career advancement as being high, that's an issue for Google and they should think about it.
But they do. I mean, nearly 4 out of 5 do think there are career opportunities there. Right, 3.9.
You could look at it this way. Although I think with the Glassdoor, those subtle differences between like a 3.9 and a 4.2 matter.
Okay, but I mean, still nearly 4 out of 5 think that there are opportunities for advancement.
True. The big takeaway from this article is when you really get down into the culture at Google and ask the women if they like to work there,
they're pretty much okay with it.
They pretty much are okay.
You know why? Because people don't watch them closely and they can watch Netflix all
exactly,
afternoon.
Right.
And that's where they catch Scandal.
Scandal.
Tell
now,
me about this Shonda Rhimes. You know, I don't watch TV anymore.
No, you don't.
I watch only Netflix or Amazon. Or
so you've now admitted you don't watch TV or listen to podcasts. I'm not sure what you're doing, but I know you watch Game of Thrones. But just quickly on Shonda Rhimes, she is one of the top showrunners in the country. She's produced hit after hit, Grey's Anatomy, Scandal. The fact that she's going over to Netflix is a big deal.
And this comes as Disney says it's pulling its films from Netflix.
Yes.
She would be a Disney. She's.
I don't think. Well, she's at ABC now, ABC, which is part of Disney.
Right.
But I think it's making a statement about where the future of creativity and talent is headed, and it's not in the networks. And look, the fact that she's a woman, she's African American, has given her a certain kind of just. She's got a massive amount of credibility for those reasons, as well as the fact that her shows are so successful. She's making a statement. This isn't a light decision for Shonda Rhimes, the brand, to align herself with Netflix.
Are there others like her? I mean,
that kind of successful showrunners. I'm sure there are.
Oh, well, Dick Wolf would be one here in Chicago, yeah, or with NBC.
Yes, if they're really developing shows that you and I have heard of, they're successful. But this is a whole Thursday night lineup with
right.
Scandal and Catch a Murder and Grey's Anatomy. It's a big deal she's going
so
there.
So people who like her shows on networks will see if that translates to Netflix.
Where she may have more creative freedom. She's going to stay, by the way. Her shows will still be on ABC this year,
okay.
Those shows. But her move, I think, says a lot about where do people with a lot of power who could go anywhere, who have a lot of creds, where are they headed? Offline.
Yeah, that's where you watch TV now.
Yep.
Okay, Suzanne Muschen, thanks for coming by. And when's the next big payoff drop?
We just taped two good ones yesterday.
So
there'll be one up next week that really for you should be a must listen.
WGNradio.com. I'll check it out.
Thank you.
No,
that's
will.
I will believe that when one of our topics in this segment is how much you learned from listening to the Big Payoff podcast.
It might not happen right away. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. All right, I'm interested in language. Just was somewhere over the weekend where people were having a conversation about how people no longer write. Oh, I know, it was a young teacher who talked about how kids are now given iPads and things like that, and which correct their grammar in school and all of that. So the concern is we're losing our ability to write. We're losing our language in a way. A lot of people are upset that they don't have cursive writing education in some of the schools. And I kind of have a different view of it. I feel like we are in a rapid form redevelopment of our language, that we're using the same words, but we're communicating in different ways. We're evolving. We've always evolved. I would imagine when it went from strictly the spoken word to the written word in one way or another, there were people upset about that. That was an evolution. And I think we're maybe in a revolution now. Okay, so with that as a context, consider GIFs or GIFs. We'll ask here Richard how to pronounce it. But GIFs have become this new way to communicate, to convey messages without using words. Richard Robert is the CEO of Jiffy Cat. And we've talked about him from time to time. It's sort of this compilation, a great spot where you can find hundreds of different GIFs that you can insert into your messages, and whether it's on Twitter or Facebook or in text or whatever. He joins us on a phone line now. Richard, welcome to the Wintrust Business Lunch.
Thanks for having me.
All right, so let's just start. I hate to even ask for this question because people are always debating whether it's a GIF or a JIF. I grew up. I started saying GIF. What do you say? Do you say GIF or JIF?
I personally say JIF, but it's a 60-40 people saying GIF versus JIF.
Is that right?
The actual creator of the format calls it GIF, and I respect the creator, so I say GIF.
Well, that puts me in a bad spot, but I guess maybe I'll have to change then. And the Jiffy Cat, which you guys create, I think I read somewhere where you say they aren't technically GIFs, so there's something a little different about that. Explain that.
So when we looked at GIFs, because the format is so old, we spent a lot of time working on the technology to make it much faster and much more much higher quality. So we ended up using a lot of the new compression technologies to make it look fantastic. Millions of callers and, you know, at lightning speed in terms of download. But the essence of GIF, of short silent looping is there.
Well, let's go back then to how I sort of got into all of this, the fact that maybe our language or our methods of communication are changing. I'm assuming you heard some of what I had to say. I just wonder what your thoughts are about that. I mean, are GIFs becoming new sentences for us?
In many ways, they are. You can imagine, like, with the rise of mobile phones, the keyboard itself is such a bad input for conveying conversations. You want to say hello, goodbye, etc. But then you're looking at a keyboard that you put on a small phone, so you're constantly pressing and hassling with your phone, and the GIFs instead give you an easy way to convey much richer information in one fell swoop.
Do you think it's a truer message or a less true message than you can convey with a keyboard?
I think it's a different message. It's with a keyboard, the information is there, but there's no intonation to what you're sending.
Right.
And with GIFs, when you want to send a hello GIF, for example, if you find one that's more comedic, then you're trying to set a certain tone. Versus when you're trying to put something much more serious, you pick a more serious character to convey that thought.
Just a personal thing. I have a little travel business, and I have a group of WGN listeners. They happen to be in Northern Ireland right now, and so I like to check in and see how they're doing. When I sent an email to their guide, who's a friend of mine in Ireland, you know, I said, how's the group? He responded just with one of those emojis with a thumbs up, which is frustrating to me. I want to hear more words, but I suppose from him, he was busy and it was just a way for him to convey something in a very quick way. Guys like me who are frustrated by that, I guess, are going to just have to work a little bit more to put meaning behind those images.
But in many ways, his response actually gave you enough information to go about with your business. Instead, if he had tried to compose a long email, he may not have sent it. So that immediacy of information sharing just makes it that you can communicate much more often.
All right, so let's move from GIFs a little bit to emojis, because this might be more likely, at least in the more immediate future. But I'm curious, do you think ever that emojis will become, that an emoji, especially popular one, might ever be considered so pervasive that it becomes like a letter in our alphabet or, you know, a word in our language?
In many ways, emojis have become a visual language. They are part of communication. They're in many ways, people use them as part of the sentence. So they are becoming a part of our language.
All right. And so Jiffy Cat, we haven't talked too much about the website. I'm sorry. It's a great compilation where you can go and sort of get, if you want to convey a mood or a message without the benefit of words, great way to do that. I know you raised $10 million last year. I'm wondering what your business model is, how you turn this sort of compilation of GIFs around into making money.
Yes. So we started with the premise that people need a platform, just like YouTube has done it for video. They need a platform where they can create something that uniquely speaks to them and that they can share. So Jiffy Cat for us is what YouTube is for long-form video. From a monetization perspective, because we're a consumer business, it's an ad business. Comes through advertising.
Well, it's a fun site to go around and play with. I've enjoyed it the last few days. Richard Robert, the CEO of Jiffy Cat, thanks for joining us today. I appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.